Glorious, isn't it? The Honda President's Day sales event is so good, a giant limestone monument was erected in its honor. Really take in the patriotic curves of the 2015 Accord, Civic, and Pilot. All three can be financed at 0.9% APR for well-qualified buyers. It's beautiful.
Is that still going on?
For a limited time.
Can we go?
But the tour! All right, but no flash photography. The salespeople spook easily.
Right now, get financing as low as 0.9% APR for well-qualified buyers on Honda, America's most trusted brand.
To learn more, visit your local North Country Honda dealer or online at northcountryhondadealers.com.
Based on 2014 Brand Image Awards from Kelley Blue Book, visit kbb.com for more information. See dealer for financing details.
It's time to get the story behind the story. Interviews with newsmakers, newsbreakers, and your phone calls. Radio Vermont presents The Mark Johnson Show.
Thank you, Jim Conner. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Thanks for tuning in. A little chilly out there this morning, in case you haven't noticed. 18 below on the way in this morning. Thanks for joining us. Coming up on the program today, we're not going to be talking about death here in our first segment. Thank you all for indulging me yesterday in that program. I hope it was helpful to some of you. We were talking yesterday about the hospice programs here in Vermont. Got some nice correspondence, and I'll share some of that with you because there are actually some programs going on out there that we should tell you about that or outside of Chittenden County as well, too. All right, we're going to take your phone calls on the program today. We'd love to hear from you at the usual numbers, 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. You can also reach us on our toll-free lines. That's 877-291-8255. A couple of previews of coming attractions. Friday, I'll be back down at the State House. Thursday, I'll be broadcasting from Burlington. We're going to be joined by the University of Vermont President Tom Sullivan in one of our segments. Well, later in the day, I'm going to actually be a moderator of a mayoral forum up in Burlington. So we'll be carrying, I'll be sharing with you some of the highlights of that at a future date. Tomorrow, I'll be down in Randolph. There is a big conference on on climate change. I'll be down there moderating a panel. So Joel Nashman's going to be sitting in on the program tomorrow. Again, our number is 244-1777. That's our local number. Toll free, you can reach us at 877-291-8255. We're going to begin this morning. We're going to talk a little nutrition. And welcome to the airwaves here, Mike Roussel. Now, you're saying to yourself, geez, Mark, that name sounds familiar to me. Mike Roussel is the owner and operator of the tailor shop up in Stowe's Lower Village. And he has three wonderful children, and one of them is joining us right here in our studios. And Mike Roussel, who's not a junior because he has a different middle name than his father, is a nutritionist, author, and his most recent book is The Six Pillars of Nutrition. I think you're missing a button. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, did you, when you were growing up, you always had to look perfectly when you left the house, right?
Well, I always did, yeah. You know, I've always been into fitness, and when you lift a lot of weights and train athletically, you don't fit in a lot of clothes. So I've been very fortunate to have a dad that can fix everything that I need.
You know, I was it was interesting. The first time I met your dad, it was actually a little bit of a period of time after I started the ads, and I was telling everybody how he had 50 years of experience in the business, and then I met him, and he didn't look that much older than I am. He's had quite a bit of experience.
Yeah, he's been tailoring since he was 10 years old, or maybe a little bit sooner than that, so he's been doing it for a very long time.
Right, and he's got one of your kids right now.
One of my older children, Peter, is there at the tailor shop putting in the work.
Any great stories you can tell us about your dad?
Yeah, lots of great stories I could tell you about my dad. I could say that I'm the only sibling who didn't get into tailoring. And as a kid, my dad tried to have me help him do alterations, and he thinks I did it on purpose, but I would say it was inadvertently. I was cutting, when I was removing seams, I was actually cutting the sport coat sleeves. And so it didn't take very long until he told me to head back downstairs and play, because I was costing him money doing the alterations than helping him.
Talk about the path that you took that got you to the world of nutrition.
So I got started, I was always into athletics as a kid, and, you know, kind of saw nutrition and supplementation. You know, they do a lot of marketing of sports supplements.
Let me just stop. You grew up here locally.
Grew up in Craftsbury. Spent my summers in Stowe, working at McCarthy's, washing dishes, working behind the line. Used to play basketball in the summers at Stowe Elementary School. And, you know, was just very into sports. And And when I went to college, I was into biochemistry and science and wanted to go to medical school. And so my wife and I got married after I graduated from college, and we moved back here to Burlington, and I went to the University of Vermont Medical School for about a year and a half, year and a half. My friends from medical school joked that I did all the hard stuff because I left after all the science, right, when they got into all the doctoring. But I just, at that point, I just didn't think medicine was for me. I loved the science, and I loved the nutrition and wanted to focus on that. So I had a lot of great guidance at UVM that helped me go to graduate school, and went to Penn State and studied nutrition and cardiovascular disease with one of the world's leading experts, Dr. Pennycress Atherton. And it's just been amazing ever since.
Do a lot of people leave medical school like that? I mean, that sounds like, gosh, you know, you put a year and a half in, it'd be hard to do that.
No, I think the only people that leave medical school are the ones that get thrown out at that point. I was the only, no sane person leaves after that, because it takes so long. You know, it's a good 4 years of college and the whole process to get in. But I guess you got to know what you want to do.
Yeah. So what was that decision like making? How did you make that decision?
It was probably, I would say, about 6 or 7 months into it. After we did the nutrition, you get about a week of nutrition education at that point you did in your first year of medical school. And that part really spoke to me. And nutritional biochemistry really spoke to me. Because it's really all about solving puzzles. Like, biochemistry is just like little molecular puzzles. And that I thought was really interesting. I laugh with my wife that I'm grossly unemployable. So I thought my future as a doctor, being an employee working at a hospital or something, I have very hard time taking directions, being told when to do things. So, you know, that wasn't looking good down the road.
Your dad said that about you too.
Yeah, I bet he did. Yeah. We're similar in that way. So, you know, with that, those are kind of the inklings, and the lifestyle of a physician, I think, wasn't what I expected it to be. And I just kind of had this passion for nutrition, and my wife, all along, we've been married 10 years now, and all along has just, you know, believed in me and said, if this is what you really want to do, like, I'm behind you. So we packed up and moved to central Pennsylvania, which is a tough sell.
Wow. Yeah. So you've been married 10 years. You look like you're about 22, so you're kind of like your dad. So you got married at 12 or something.
Yeah,
like that.
No.
So you went to graduate school.
Yep.
Then what happened?
While I was in graduate school, we had twins, and then we had another child right as I graduated. And I think there's no better motivator than a bunch of kids that need to be fed and have health insurance. So as I was leaving school, like, I'd started a business along the way, like a consulting business, and started writing for some magazines and different things, and just decided to continue that business so we could stay in the area that we wanted. And because I think one of the reasons why I left medical school was for the lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And so we didn't want to, you know, we wanted to stay near family. And so I just, you know, worked a little harder starting this consulting business.
Okay. All right. And then you started writing, too.
Yeah, and started writing, yeah. And so, I mean, I love what I do every day. And it runs the span of helping people one-on-one, which is really just kind of figuring out problems and solving them with their nutrition, to do a lot of work with Men's Health Magazine and writing with Shape Magazine as well, and do some consulting with food industry, like food groups, like on the science side, like helping them structure research studies that are better. And kind of more objective.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of run the whole gamut, helping just translate the nutritional science into messages and things that people understand. The nutrition has just become such big news. You know, it's in the headlines all the time now.
Yeah.
And it's so sensationalized that it really does people a disservice. And so, you know, one of the things that I really try to do with my nutrition work is to cut through that sensationalism and really give people strategies that help them in their day-to-day life.
That are real.
Yeah,
I mean,
that
just,
are real.
There's so much, I mean, with all due respect, I mean, there's so much garbage out there on nutrition, too.
Oh, it's insane. There's so much garbage. You know, nutrition, I always laugh. Nutrition is one of the only fields where you could read a nutrition or health fitness magazine and think that you study nutrition. You know, that right. You are then qualified to give out, like, if you take a multivitamin, yeah, you are then qualified to, you know, advise people on
right
on nutrition. So
right.
Yeah, there's a lot of junk out there.
Kind of like if I walk in the woods, then I should be the commissioner of forest and parks or something.
Exactly,
like that.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
So I canceled my subscription to Men's Health Magazine, just kidding. And I, you know, should be regularly following your column. I should probably be reading this magazine, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So what do you write about in Men's Health Magazine?
So I have a monthly column there called Ask the Nutrition Know-It-All,
okay,
which they came up with the title. I did not. My ego's not big enough to come up with that title. And we field reader questions. You know, just all kinds of things like, you know, what are amino acid supplements? Should I take them after I work out? Or I have high blood pressure. Do I need to worry about salt? I'll answer a lot of questions like for the editors and writers, like when they're writing articles and they want to bounce something off me, like, is this scientifically accurate and, mm-hmm. and things along those lines. And then every so often I'll write like a feature article for them. We do videos. Like if you go to menshealth.com, there's a ton of 60-second nutrition Q&A videos that I've done for them.
Do you make up the letters or are they real letters?
Which letters?
The letters that you respond to in your column.
It's a mix. It's
really?
A mix, yeah.
So you're willing to admit that?
Well, no, because I think a lot of times people don't ask the right questions. So, you know, you got to if you ever get, like, well, you get reader mail or calls, and sometimes people ask, it's like a four-paragraph question that you kind of trim down to two sentences make it more applicable to, you know, to the, all your readership. So, yeah, that totally happens.
Well, I mean, I add a lot of compliments on it. I mean, when I read stuff, but, you know, that's poetic license. That's allowed.
Well, it's nutrition poetic license is what it is.
All right. 244-1777 is our local number. Toll-free 877-291-8255. We're talking with Mike Roussel. He's a nutritionist and the author of The Six Pillars of Nutrition. You know, it is interesting. There really is much more of a focus on nutrition. I know there's a woman, Wendy Hess, who worked up at the University of Vermont Health Center up there who did nutrition. So why do you think there has been more of this focus on nutrition?
Well, I think because if you look at the major health issues that are impacting our culture right now, nutrition can solve almost all of them. I would say, with the exception of, you know, cancer is a major issue, and I think that that's so individualized and so complicated, like it's not like a nutritional answer. But if you look at obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, metabolic syndrome, which is like the unholy matrimony between cardiovascular disease and diabetes, all these things can be solved with nutrition and a little physical activity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's getting more expensive. As people are getting sicker, it's getting a lot more expensive to medicate them. And the load on the healthcare system is becoming a lot greater. And so even those individuals who had previously been just into helping people take the drugs that they need to take to manage their disease are into getting people to actually start eating right and mitigating these things.
How do you explain why there's this epidemic of obesity in our country?
Well, because, you know, unfortunately, foods that taste really good and are not very expensive aren't the best foods for you. You know, I also think you don't see a lot of Super Bowl commercials for spinach. You know, the money is not behind fruits and vegetables and lean proteins in moderation. Those aren't, you know, very attractive messages. And I think also people are lacking the skill set to do the things. I think one of the great examples of that is saturated fat. So saturated fat, is reducing saturated fat in our diets, having people eat less saturated fat, has been like a major public health message for probably my whole life to reduce risk of heart disease.
Right.
And I think if we could ask maybe anybody in the radio station, should you eat more or less saturated fat, you know, butter, you know, things like that, they would say less. But if you look at the data on a grams per day basis, how much saturated fat people are eating, they're eating the exact same amount since the mid 80s. So people know they should do this, but they're just not doing it. And I think part of the nutritional messaging hasn't been giving people the skill set to do what they need to do. You know, so people know, they're just not putting it into action. And so that's, you know, one of the things I really try to focus on when working with people is action steps to actually do the things they need to do, not just telling them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You say there were no broccoli ads on the Super Bowl, but weren't those carrots that were standing next to Katy Perry? Oh, no, those were sharks. Sorry. All right. So how do people, how do you actually successfully lose weight and not have it come back on another month later?
Well, I think the thing is you need to look at it like you're in it for the long haul. You know, once I had a client who had lost a bunch of weight and said to me, well, when can I go back to eating normal? And you can't. Like, you can't go back to eating, quote-unquote, normal. Like, normal got you in, you know, what you considered normal got you in trouble. Like, this is the new normal. I think people have an expectation that I'm going to change my behavior and, you know, starve myself or exercise more than my schedule really allows for a set period of time, lose the weight, then I'll go back to doing what I was doing before, and everything will be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't work that way. I mean, nothing in your life would really work that way if you, you know, were very focused, made a change, and then reverted back to an old behavior. Like, if you quit smoking cigarettes for a month and then go back to smoking cigarettes, like, you're not healthier for it.
Right.
So I think there's a long-term perspective that people miss. And it's very easy to eat a lot of calories. You know, so you need to be disciplined. It's very difficult to not overeat, especially in the world that we live in. You know, when we eat most of the time because we're not hungry. We eat because we're stressed. We eat because we've seen food that looks delicious. We eat because we walk down the street and smell foods that are delicious. And so science calls that reward-driven hunger.
God, I'm getting hungry listening to you.
So there's, you know, there's so much of these reward-driven hunger cues in our lives that it messes up our own ability to regulate how much food we need to eat and how much food, you know, we don't need to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge problem.
So is there something that happens in our brains where we're sort of craving that high number of calories that we don't necessarily need?
Yeah, so reward-driven hunger is a real thing. And there's actually research to show that eating protein reduces that stimulus in your brain.
Okay.
So they basically fed people protein. It was like Greek yogurt. And then they put them in a functional MRI machine and monitored how their brain was reacting when they saw pictures of, like, puppies and sunsets and then cheeseburgers and french fries and all those foods that you would crave. And the reward centers in your brain light up when you see those, you know, french fries, cheeseburgers, things like that. But if you have a higher protein meal prior,
okay,
those reward centers don't
light up as much. Really?
So protein can actually dampen that effect. And, you know, one of the strategies that I work with clients is to eat protein at every meal. And we as Americans generally just eat protein at dinner. We eat a high protein dinner.
Okay.
I was even in Texas not too long ago talking to a group of dietitians, and it was a kind of a protein research summit. And at the end of the event, we had everybody go along, and they were talking about what was their big takeaways. And 85% of the room said that they were going to eat more protein at breakfast. And so this is a group of, you know, 50, 60 people who nutrition is their life.
Wow.
And their number one takeaway was they need to eat more protein at breakfast.
Wow.
So protein actually has a really good, and that's just one. There are a lot of great effects of protein in your diet.
Okay. So what's a good protein to eat at breakfast?
It could be
bacon.
You know, bacon's more of a higher fat food than protein. It doesn't have that much, unfortunately.
All right.
Things like eggs.
Coffee cake,
no,
okay.
Unless it's laced with protein powder.
Right.
But you could do eggs, even like lean ham, chicken sausage, Greek yogurt, smoothies with protein powder are really convenient for a lot of people because mornings can be kind of crazy and you can get a lot of nutrition into something like that.
Okay.
You know, milk is a great protein. You know, one cup of milk has 8 grams of protein. In a perfect world, you eat 30 grams of protein at each meal during the day. So if you have a glass of milk, you're, you know, a third of the way there.
Okay. All right. So 30 grams you should have at each meal?
Yeah.
All right. So tell me, okay, so I get 8 with the milk.
Yep.
How much would I get with the Greek yogurt?
A cup of Greek yogurt is about 20.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so that right there, two-thirds of it.
Yeah, and an egg has 6. So, you know, if you have 2 eggs and some milk and maybe 1 or 2 small pieces of a chicken sausage.
Okay.
A scoop of protein powder generally has 20.
Okay. That's a big breakfast.
Well, you don't do all those things, but, you know, you could piece it together.
Okay.
And I think, too, most people with breakfast, it's easier if you eat the same thing. You know, I don't think you need to get all crazy culinary with breakfast.
Right.
Because you're
6
on...
6 a.m. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's... Yeah, exactly. You're sleepy. You know, you're on a clock.
I mean, I made my oatmeal this morning before I even knew what happened.
Yeah, you need something. Well, that's one of the things with nutrition is we have so many food decisions that we make every day that if you can take the decision-making out of it, like, you know, in the morning you're having oatmeal. Like,
right.
It's not a decision. You can do it while you're, you know, half asleep.
Yep.
That's really key because there's a thing called decision fatigue, which gets at people.
Yeah.
And, you know, all of a sudden when you're starting making all these decisions, you're kind of...
The jelly study, when you go into the store and there's 60 different jellies to pick from and they get paralyzed and you can't pick one.
Exactly,
whereas
yeah.
You have 2 peanut butters and it's either crunchy or not crunchy.
Yes. Yeah, that's exactly it. Because if you get all these decisions, you're like, whatever, I'm just going to revert to my regular behavior, which would be...
Coffee cake.
Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. And bacon, too. A protein research summit?
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Honey, where are you going this weekend? I'm going to the protein research summit. All right. And I'm leaving you with the 4 kids. Let me have you put those on here. 244 in the twins. 244-1777. And Grandpa can't watch all 4 of them at the same time. Let's go to Barry. Pete, good morning. How are you? You're on the air with nutritionist Mike Roussel.
Yes, good morning. And good morning to your guest. I've been curious about this for years. Genetically, is there anything in humans that come fall? I know that many mammals want to bulk up for winter. Is there something in our genetic makeup that is akin to that? I'll get off and see what you have to say.
All right. So there is some research and some hypothesis around seasonal changes and how that could be driving obesity. And one of the things is that in the winter, we live in such an artificially warm environment, not in Vermont necessarily, because when it's minus 20, it's still cold in your house. But that not having that cyclical temperature regulation actually is one of the things that could be driving obesity, because it does modify how our genes, our thrifty genes, the genes that regulate energy balance, are working. So I think it's a small factor. It's not the driving force, but it definitely is a real factor.
When did this obesity thing really start to become, a big problem in this country? Were people in the 30s and the 40s overweight, and the 50s? I mean, was it the prosperity of the 60s? What happened here?
I think a lot of different people can draw timelines in a lot of different ways, but it was mid-century, mid-1900s. And then kind of growing from there, really picking up in the 70s. But, people have been overweight forever. If you look at the history of the presidents, a lot of the early presidents were rather large.
Right.
We kind of maybe have this Mad Men vision of, people back in the 30s and 40s, but there were still people that were overweight and obese back then.
Right. Yeah. William Howard Taft immediately coming to mind here. Yeah. Yeah.
I think one of the big differences now is that obesity used to be something with the affluent population, because they were the only ones who had access to the money with all the food.
Yeah.
And the way that our food supply has shifted, cheap food is very calorically dense. So you can not spend a lot of money and get a ton of calories.
Right.
And so, that shifted to basically now everybody has the opportunity to become overweight, where previously it was not.
We were talking in this state here about there's a proposal to tax sugar-sweetened beverages. A couple of other places have looked at it, too. How detrimental is sugar-sweetened soda? How detrimental is non-sugar-sweetened beverages?
I think I'm not a fan of added sugar. I think added sugar, like sugar-sweetened beverages, is one of the worst things you could do nutritionally, because you don't sense those calories when you drink it. Like I just drank a black coffee, but I could have added 8 sugars and I would have drank the same thing and would not have felt like I consumed anything. And, having all that sugar, we already live in a sugar-rich environment, and diabetes is such a growing issue that it's really driving that. Is it just sugar-sweetened beverages? No. But it's added sugar all over the place. And I think if you were to make one decision starting today that you could do, it was to reduce added sugar in your diet, and the calories that you drink is the first and easiest place to do that.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about diet soda and aspartame?
I think that it's better to drink diet soda than it is to drink soda loaded with sugar. I think that the research shows in moderate consumption, there's nothing wrong with diet soda. Like if you take a rat and fill them up with aspartame, at levels that you would never consume, there are going to be maybe some negative health effects. But, if you look at it, I always like to look at it as a continuum, right? So if you look at sugar-sweetened beverages on one side, diet soda, and then water on the other end,
right,
that just move down that continuum as much as possible. But a diet soda now and then is not going to kill you.
Water? Yeah. All right, so no coffee cake, no bacon, and now we're down to water. Wow. All right.
I don't actually think that's how I said it.
Okay. All right, that was how I interpreted it. I'm sometimes a little oversensitive. I can admit that. Let's go over to Barry. Hi, Barbara. How are you this morning?
I'm fine. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a comment on why we have overweight children. They never get any exercise.
Okay.
They get out of school, the mother picks them up right at the door. They go home, they sit, they play their games inside, their mechanical games. They get these handheld things. They never go out and run around the yard. They don't go play ball. They don't shovel the drive. They do nothing but sit and play these games. And I think kids just need more exercise.
All right. Let me get our guests to comment on that. So, is it really the calories in, calories out? I mean, how big an influence can you actually have with exercise?
It is definitely calories in, calories out at the biggest level. And I think exercise has a huge impact. I agree that kids, adults, everyone in general does not exercise enough. Exercise is going to supercharge what you do with your diet. So you could exercise all you want, but if you're still eating a high-calorie diet, you know, you can't out-exercise that. You go run a mile, right, or you go work out. Let's say you can burn 100 calories. You could eat 100 calories like nothing.
Right.
So it's a key strategy. But I think with nutrition, one of the things as well, or with obesity, is everybody's looking for what's the one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you look at all the health diet books, it's all about this is the one thing you've been missing. But right. There's not one thing.
Right.
It's a collection of things.
All right. So besides soda, where's another big area of empty calories?
Cakes, cookies, and pies. You know, desserts, those sorts of things. Snacks, most snack foods that people are eating are really empty calories.
What do you eat for snacks? God, I never thought I'd ask somebody that question in my life.
Nuts. Nuts are a great snack. I eat nuts. I'll have Greek yogurt as a snack.
God, you should. Do you have a deal yet with the Greek yogurt people? Because you should. You are the best.
I don't. No, actually, I don't.
You're the best proponent for these people.
I don't.
It's unbelievable.
No, I don't have
any. You know, and that, their government is in deep trouble. They're going to need your help. You sell some more Greek yogurt. Maybe they'll get out of their debt crisis.
I think part of the problem is none of the Greek yogurt being sold has any ties to Greece.
<That's> right. Yeah, it's about as good a connection as that poor state senator who came up with the Latin motto, and everybody thought he was talking about Latin America. Let's go to Barry. Bill, good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. What a show. That's a great show. I'm going to do something different. But first of all, these sweet drinks that are naturally sweet. Now, I'm talking about one I had this morning called orange juice. I also had a banana this morning, and my wife has a whole bunch of Greek yogurts right now in the refrigerator. Those juices, I like the taste of them. I can't understand why anyone would want a soda when they could have an orange juice, a natural orange juice. I get it from Florida. It's a Florida's naturals.
All right, well, let me ask Mike, is the sugar any different in this?
Not really.
Really?
I think there's a lot that's been made with high fructose corn syrup,
yeah.
Right, and how that's really this big driver. But if you really look at it, if you're drinking, you know, we talked about the satiety effects, that fullness effect, like you feel like you consume calories. Whether you drink a sweetened tea, an orange juice, or, you know, something else, like a soda, it's all the same. You know, orange juice is going to have some added vitamins. You know, they fortify it now with vitamin D and calcium.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has vitamin C. So you're getting that good nutrition. But if you're looking to lose weight, I really still suggest that you cut out drinking calories at any level.
Hmm. All right. So it's pretty much down to the water, right?
Well, it's not just water. I mean, there's tea.
All right.
Right?
Woohoo! Let's have a cup of tea. Let's really branch out here. Hey, can you and your coffee, too, right?
Yeah, coffee. You know, coffee is one of the things that I change. I rarely change someone's coffee habit.
Okay.
Because if you're going to have a little bit of cream and maybe one or two teaspoons of sugar, for most people, it's the ritual of having the coffee. And I want people to feel good about what they're doing. And so the first thing I say is, well, you can't have the coffee how you like it. Every right. morning, they're going to wake up and curse me.
Exactly.
As they're making this thing that they used to love or right. used to love and now they hate.
My real question. Can you hear me?
Yeah, uh-huh.
My real question is this. Right now, I'm 83. I weigh 5 pounds less than I did in college. I was in sports in college.
Wow.
So I was in pretty good shape, and I work out a lot. I used to ski, mainly because it's not easy to get to the ski areas now. But anyway, so I find I don't have a problem of being overweight. I have always eaten, trying to gain weight, and I know other seniors now have a problem gaining weight. All the ads, you look on the TV, they all want you to try to cut down on your calories. So the other day, somebody said, I think it was Elizabeth Squire on the Sunday thing, said avocados. So mm-hmm. I've started getting avocados because she says they got calories, but they are not bad calories. It's good for you. So I try to eat foods like that, like I eat a banana every day.
All right.
And okay. So how does a person who is the other problem...
gain weight?
Yes.
Okay.
Or yeah. at least maintain your weight.
All right.
Yeah, no, that's a good... I think that's a really good point because... one of the things with the aging population that we don't realize is that malnutrition is such a huge issue. And it's a big driver for hospital readmissions, and it's kind of the silent driver of a lot of diseases and problems that are happening with people as they get older.
Really? That's interesting.
Well, it's not, you know, it's not the most attractive yeah. headline, yeah. right? Not enough vitamin D sending people to the hospital.
Yeah.
But, you know, avocados, if you're looking to maintain your weight, something like an avocado is great because it's full of monounsaturated fat, so it's going to be more calorie dense. Those are the same fats that are like in olive oil and some nuts, not in Greek yogurt.
Okay.
And so looking for those more calorie-dense foods, how you can get them into your diet. So having an avocado, or if your wife has yogurt, adding something like chopped walnuts to it, or a flaxseed, you know, things that are going to be healthful but a little more calorically dense are going to allow you to get more calories in your diet without requiring you to eat that much more food. Because I think, you know, having sometimes people, when they have trouble gaining weight, they just have trouble consuming all the food required to do that. And so if you can find ways to add fats and oils and nuts and seeds to your diet, those are going to bump up the calorie content and allow you to maintain your weight.
Hmm. Okay. Is there an avocado Greek yogurt variety? Do you know?
There isn't, no.
Okay. No. Right. That could be your suggestion.
Yes, I will.
Yep. I don't mean this facetiously. Could somebody like Bill drink soda and get those calories, those kind of empty calories that are usually bad? Maybe they're good for him?
They would be calories. I would say that they're probably not good calories for you, because as you get older...
I mean, there are good calories and bad calories? Aren't calories calories?
Well, energy is energy, right? So yeah, calories are calories. But we don't consume calories, we consume food. And when you consume food, right, it also yeah. acts like hormones in your body. Like different foods that you eat in your digestive tract can stimulate the release of different hormones.
All right.
And so if you were to consume, you know, as you get older, your ability to process sugars declines. And that's why more people get diabetes as they get older.
All right.
And so the more sugar you're going to consume, right, the more that's going to kind of drive that process, the more of these simple sugars. So I would say minimize those. You know, in his case, a glass of orange juice is fine. He's trying to maintain his weight. He's very active. You know, a lot of those things are forgiving, give you more forgiveness nutritionally.
Mm-hmm.
So there are good calories and bad calories, because it's not just calories. They act like hormones in your body, and different foods do different things to your body.
Hmm. Okay. We're talking with nutritionist Mike Roussel. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Sandy, good morning. How are you?
I was out of the room and you were talking about protein, but did you say that, you said milk is okay, right?
Yeah, milk is a great source of protein. One cup of milk has 8 grams of protein in it.
Okay, so I could have that 3 times a day, probably.
Yeah, and that would also give you, you know, just about all the calcium that you need as well.
Okay. Oh, I don't have to take a supplement.
No, if you're drinking 3 glasses of milk a day, you definitely don't need a calcium supplement. And there's some research show that too much calcium is not actually good for you, so.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for your call. 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Let me take a moment of your time to remind you about our friends at Green Mountain Access. If you're looking for outstanding internet coverage, make it our friends at gmavt.net. Call them toll-free today at 1-888-321-0815. And they're on the web at gmavt.net. We'll take a short break. We'll come back, continue our discussion with nutritionist Mike Roussel. We'll be back right after this.
In your life, there will be times when you'll need knowledgeable legal representation that is supportive and effective. Consider Anderson & Associates in Stowe. For 20 years, they have provided skillful representation in civil litigation matters, divorce and custody disputes, criminal defense, and business transactions. Contact Anderson & Associates online at andersonlawvt.com. or call 253-4011 and speak to Peter Anderson, Maureen Parker, or Todd Shove. Anderson & Associates, trusted advisors and experienced representation, proudly serving businesses and individuals throughout Vermont.
Looking for a loan for your Vermont business, childcare, or nonprofit organization? Look at the Vermont Community Loan Fund. Because at the Vermont Community Loan Fund, we lend to Vermont businesses and nonprofits, even if the bank says you're not quite ready for a loan. At the Vermont Community Loan Fund, we focus on people, not profits. We'll work closely with you before and after you get your loan to make sure you get what you need to succeed. The Vermont Community Loan Fund makes loans to early stage companies and established businesses ready to take the next step. We lend to farms and food producers, high-tech businesses, manufacturers, retailers, childcare businesses, affordable housing developers, service providers, and other nonprofit organizations. We make loans to Vermonters doing business right here at home and around the world. So if you're looking for financing to help your growing business, look at the Vermont Community Loan Fund. Visit us online at investinvermont.org. That's investinvermont.org.
Do you have water damage or soot damage? Call SR Services in Montpelier. They're the experts. Don't get discouraged if your home has been damaged by water from flooding or a leaky roof. SR Services has the equipment and expertise to restore the appearance of your home to like new again. They work on tile and grout floors, too. Gray grout lines will be white again, thanks to SR Services. For water and smoke damage or professional carpet cleaning, call SR Services at 223-6577. SR Services, 407 Barry Street in Montpelier, 223-6577.
802 Honda promised super-friendly service with low pricing, and you heard us. Thanks to all of our customers for making 802 Honda the fastest-growing Honda dealer in Vermont.
At 802 Honda, we love to listen. Our Lease It Your Way program is designed to customize a lease for both your budget and driving needs.
You can drive away every new Honda with absolutely no money down, or pick your payment, and we will show exactly how much money down you need. The biggest myth about leasing is mileage. We're custom designing leases for higher mileage drivers all the time, often with 20,000 miles or more. Let us custom tailor a lease your way.
Find out what many of your neighbors already know. 802 Honda is the only place to get your next Honda. We also have the top-ranked service department in Vermont.
Click on 802honda.com. Call 223-9700. Drive I-89 to exit 7. We're less than 1 minute off the interstate. 802 Honda, driving to be Vermont's number one Honda dealer.
25 years of screaming NASCAR race fans. 25 years of raw emotion, roaring engines, checkered flags, and pit row brawls. This isn't just history, it's history in the making. Join New Hampshire Motor Speedway for its 25th anniversary and experience it for yourself. Buy your tickets now for the July 19th New Hampshire 301, part of the Oxford Casino Season of Speed, and get a commemorative diecast car. Call 603-783-4931 or visit nhms.com.
Back, continue our discussion. We've been talking this morning with nutritionist Mike Roussel. You can join us at 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. If you're just tuning in, Mike is the son of our tailor friend, Mike Roussel, up in Stowe's Lower Village. Why would I want to go to Mike Roussel in Stowe's Lower Village, little Mike?
Why?
Yeah, why would I want to go to him?
Because he's the greatest tailor you'll ever meet.
How much experience does he have?
Over 50 years.
How did he happen to make that happen?
He got started at a very young age, hanging out at a tailor shop, and met some guys, and they told him to come, and they taught him how to sew. Old school. I mean, he spent 2 years sewing through his pant leg again and again to gain needle control.
Wow.
So it's really an art. I mean, he's an artist.
Wow. So yeah. Does he have all sorts of nicks and cuts on his leg as a result?
They probably healed, but he's the only guy. He will be sewing, and if he gets distracted or something, will every so often sew through his finger.
Okay.
And he'll just pull the needle out, band-aid it up, and keep going.
Wow.
I mean, you just don't see that anymore.
All right, so not only is he the best tailor in the area, he's one of the toughest dudes you're ever going to find.
Totally.
And he's open on what days of the week?
Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and from 10 to 6.
And he opens the doors at 10 a.m.?
Yeah. All right,
very good. So far, so good.
Yeah.
And when you stop up and see Mike, tell him that his son sent you, okay? Let's go to Granville. Hi, Vivian. Good morning.
Talk to you. You know I have Parkinson's. I told you that before. And when I was first diagnosed, people were always saying, here, take this. This is really good. This will cure Parkinson's, you know, the whole nine yards. And I just kind of blew half of it off because I believe in research. In fact, I was involved in some drug trials in Boston for real research. And I nutritional supplements, where do you stand on those?
I think nutritional supplements is a very broad category. And I think that a lot of them are sold as a magic pill that cures diseases. But none of them do that. I think they're a good way to, as the name says, supplement your diet with nutrients that you wouldn't be able to get in certain quantities, or you don't get because you don't eat enough variety in your diet. So it's a good way to backfill your diet with what you're missing, but not a way to give you, you know, extra power.
Like what? I mean, what?
Well, like vitamin
D. What are we
D.
missing?
So say something like vitamin D, where we live in Vermont, or I live in Rochester, New York.
Ooh, yeah.
You know, there's not enough sunshine where we are, and with relationship to the equator, we're just not getting the vitamin D that we need. Another thing would be, excuse me, EPA and DHA, which are omega-3 fatty acids.
Okay.
Americans get more protein from bread than they do from fish. So people just aren't eating enough fish. And
wow.
So an omega-3 supplement would be another great thing.
Okay. Anything that can cure Vivian's Parkinson's?
No, unfortunately, there's not anything to cure Parkinson's, no.
Anything that would make it easier or better?
There's some research to show that omega-3s, that omega-3 supplements, higher doses can help.
Okay. Anybody ever told you that, Vivian? Okay. All right. Let's head over to Moncton. Paul, how you doing this morning?
I'm fine. Good morning, Mark. Good morning, Mike.
Morning.
Hey, you touched on a bunch of issues that I find very interesting. Most importantly for me as a 52-year-old now is the issue of diabetes. I don't have a problem with it at the moment, but I have noticed over the past few years, whereas I used to start my day out with, fruit, including fruit, you know, a lot of sugar, unfortunately. But if I don't have anything solid, like whole wheat bread or something that's going to fill me up, that it's good for me, I do find myself getting what used to, you know, used to consider migraine headaches. I've found a halo around my eyes and the headaches doesn't come on. And it's usually because I haven't had solid food to go along with any of the sweet I have had. But my question to you is, does it matter whether it is processed sugar type and empty calorie sweets, or if I'm having, you know, just a banana and an orange, is that sugar without solid food also going to cause those kind of symptoms?
It sounds like maybe what you're having was hypoglycemia, which is low blood sugar. And so if you eat refined sugars, right, things like added sugars that would be in cakes, cookies, pies, coffee cake,
yeah,
things like that, what happens is that makes your blood sugar go up. And then your body responds by releasing hormones to try to control that. And sometimes it overshoots. And then you end up getting low blood sugar. And with liquid calories, it's a lot easier. Those get into your system a lot faster. So you get that roller coaster of blood sugar a lot easier. So if you go to something more whole, you know, that you have to eat, it's slower digested. There's going to be fiber, which then slows the process. And you're probably going to eat less total carbohydrates and less sugar. So the whole process is slowed down so you don't get such peaks and valleys with your blood sugar.
Mm. Okay, well, I've tried recently, you know, almost every day I start out with a banana. And I've actually been having, as you mentioned before, the Greek yogurt. I've been using cabbage, no fat or low fat. But in addition to that, I've been a handful of nuts, some whole wheat bread. And I've noticed that that in and of itself has helped if I have my coffee with a couple of teaspoons of sugar and raw. And or if I have one pastry, small pastry later on, that after, you know, mid-morning. But as long as I start out with that type of food, it tends to balance it. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, so the way that you just described all those foods, there isn't anything in there that's going to cause a big rise in your blood sugar. And adding things like the protein, which is in the Greek yogurt, the fiber, which is in the whole grain bread, those are going to slow the digestion and give you better control on your blood sugar. And then also a banana, the sugars in bananas don't act like sugars in like table sugar or sugars and sugar-sweetened beverages. They're digested differently, so they get into your bloodstream even slower.
Hmm.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call. Good on the fiber, too, right?
Good on the fiber. Yeah, people don't get enough fiber.
Because I've read places that bananas are actually bad for you. Because some people claim that they're not a good food for you.
No, bananas are fine.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with a banana.
All right. How about a little banana coffee cake? Let's head over to Shelburne. Good morning, Shelburne.
Yeah, this is Ray. Hi, Mark.
Ray, good morning.
And hi to your guests. I just wondered if your guest is familiar with Haley Pomeroy's book on dieting with metabolic, addressing the metabolism, how your body breaks down, like he was alluding to with the with the hormones of the proteins and things. I wonder if he's familiar with her work.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Say the name again.
Haley Pomeroy.
Okay. All right.
No, I'm not. I'm not familiar with Haley's work.
Okay. Well, she sounds like she would be in agreement with you, or vice versa, in as much as the diet that she suggests has protein just about She suggests that you eat five times a day, you know, a snack in between breakfast and lunch and lunch and dinner. And like, for instance, on 2 days a week, you do grains and protein, I think, and fruit. And then another day, you just do protein and veggies. It's very interesting. I thought maybe you might have come across it.
Hmm. What's that sound like to you, Mike, when you hear that?
No, well, I think when you start moving, like, positioning certain foods on certain days, that may be to impact behavior, but there's not a lot of science behind pairing foods like that.
Well, that's good to know. It seems to work, and I just thought maybe the hunger that you might have when you cut out all the sugar and everything in your diet, the protein does seem to curb that appetite, and I just was looking for, I'm always looking for and exploring, you know, other information and how it, you know, affects me.
Yeah, so protein is the most, if you look at proteins, carbohydrates, and fats, the main kind of, they call them macronutrients, protein is the most satiating. So protein is going to make you feel the fullest. Next up would be fat, and then carbohydrates is last. So if you're eating a lot more protein, that's going to make you feel, you know, you're going to get a great feeling of fullness from that versus other foods.
What's the downside of, you know, compartmentalizing these foods? Like you said, it's not necessarily a good idea.
You mean like on specific days, like you only eat protein on certain days?
Right, grain and fruit one day and protein and veggies, you know.
One of the things with protein research that, you know, that we talked about at the Protein Summit was there's a big... Protein Research Summit, yes. That if you have protein throughout the day, kind of in 30 grams is almost the magic number with protein, that stimulates what's called protein synthesis, or kind of your body's ability to maintain and build muscle. And the more you do that every several hours, and so if you go a whole day without eating protein, you're not going to get that stimulus. And what research suggests is that if you can eat about 30 grams three times a day versus how people normally eat, which is about 60 grams at night and then little bits at breakfast and lunch, that change in protein distribution can actually slow or eliminate the muscle loss associated with aging.
Wow.
So if you were to then kind of only do protein on certain days, you're handicapping that effect.
Huh. All right. Thank you for your call. 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. And every day is a good day for Greek yogurt, right?
Yeah, and cottage cheese and beef. I mean, it's not just
it. Okay. All right. What about these diets where you eat nothing but meat? You know, it's like super protein. Does that make sense?
Like a low-carbohydrate diet?
Well, whatever that... Was it the Atkinson diet where everybody's just eating steak for, meal?
What was interesting about that, was the media's miscommunication of what the Atkins diet is really about.
Oh, all right.
Because, but that's what everyone thinks. It's steak and eggs every day and bacon.
Yeah.
And when you go on one of those very low carbohydrate diets, or it's called a ketogenic diet, because your body switches over to using fat as a primary fuel source, you actually need to control the amount of protein that you eat. You need to eat actually a little bit less protein than you normally would. So if you look at it at a percent calorie basis, ideally maybe you're at 30% of calories. When you go on one of these very low carbohydrate diets, you need to be around 20% of calories, because eating too much protein interferes with your body's ability to run on fat as a primary fuel source. Because if you have too much protein, your body can turn it actually into sugar.
Okay. Wow. All right. Where's your book available?
Amazon.com.
All right. And
it's available for the Kindle, Six Pillars of Nutrition.
Okay. Let's go to Montpelier. Peter, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Good. Go ahead.
Good. Oh, okay. Sorry. So my question was, my mom, she switched over to a diet that was low in processed foods because she was having some health issues with inflammation and stuff. And so when she swapped over, it was mostly fruits and vegetables and unprocessed meats and things like that. And it seemed to end up working for her. But one of my favorite things that whenever I go home is she always gets raw milk, and I don't know, the flavor's just better, and it tastes better to me. But I was just wondering if there are any scientific studies that prove if raw milk's better than the store-bought milk that you get.
Yeah, and does it have more protein?
No, I don't believe it has more protein.
Okay.
No, No, there's no research to show. I mean, there are certain components that people believe in raw milk, the enzymes that get killed during the pasteurization process. Some people believe that those are beneficial. It tastes different because, you know, the pasteurization process causes changes in the carbohydrates and the sugars, and so you have a different taste to it. But whether it's better for you or not is really up in the air. I think if you were to err on the side of caution, I would say it's worse for you just because most of the foodborne illness associated with dairy comes from raw milk because the, you know, we pasteurize food to get rid of the bacteria and the potential toxins. So, it's not better for you. I think it's a personal choice, but, I would recommend that you go with pasteurized milk just for safety reasons.
We're talking with nutritionist Mike Roussel. Email question from Eric. What about honey as a sweetener?
I think it goes back to sugar is sugar. So whether you want to have honey or table sugar or agave or sugar in the raw, it's all sugar.
Really?
And you
I mean, it's all the
it.
Same? I mean, it really, you would think honey more natural, you know, well, God-created product, all that kind of stuff.
No, I mean God created,
so
you could go that way too, but, you know, like, you could make the argument that cocaine is natural. Like, the natural food argument, I think, is not
point.
A strong one.
Yeah.
I mean, honey is great, but it's not that much better than table sugar. I think eat what you like in those categories, maple syrup, right?
Mm-hmm.
But just do it in moderation.
All right. Another email question from Bob. Is Splenda better than sugar, better than aspartame?
I would say that it's better than sugar if you're working to reduce the sugar load in your diet. But I think you should be consuming it in small amounts. That it goes back to kind of the added sugar argument. It has a different flavor. Like, if you like something sweetened with aspartame versus something that's sweetened with Splenda, go with whichever one you like, but just take it in moderate amounts.
All right, let's go to Montpelier. Hi, Laura. Good morning.
Thank you for the show. I am calling to ask if you could speak to protein and vegetables, and also if the people who are vegans, how would you suggest they get their protein?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. You know, I always tell clients who prefer to eat a vegetable-based diet or a plant-based diet that it's totally fine, but just the rules of your body and biochemistry don't change if you focus just on plants. So you need to find ways to get that protein. And so you're looking at things like beans, soy. You know, I call them vegetables dressed up like meats. You know, like the veggie burgers, or they call them like fake ground beef crumbles and things like that. You need to find ways to get that added protein in your diet. And so you're generally going to need to look to more processed things like those vegetables dressed up like meats, the veggie burgers and the fake meats, the tofurkey and things like that, to get that added protein. Because when you eat a plant-based diet, you can just easily eat so many carbohydrates and not get the protein that your body needs. So you just need to be careful about it. And then look every time. I always tell a client, look at your plate and say to yourself, where's the protein? And if you can't find the protein on the plate, you need to add it.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to where's the beef, right?
There's the beef. Yeah. It's protein.
Let's go to Bethel. Lorraine, good morning.
Good morning. I recently had a phone call from a friend who has been diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome. Is there anything nutritionally that might help that?
Yeah, boy, that's nasty. Yep.
Yeah, there's no magic bullet nutritionally, but I think when you start cleaning up your diet and start looking at reducing processed foods, increasing your fruits and vegetables, getting more rest, reducing stress in your life, it's all interrelated. But there's no nutritional cure for a chronic fatigue syndrome.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I've enjoyed this show a lot. I'm glad you finally mentioned milk, because so many people think milk is a no-no, and that's all I do drink is milk and juice and water and so on. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for your call.
Yeah,
why are some people negative on milk? What's the theory here?
You know, people miss
fat. Is it the fat?
No, it's not the fat, because there's a lot. I mean, low fat milk has been really pumped more, or low fat dairy products have really been pushed, especially in the dietary guidelines, more than anything else. And there's really actually more of a movement now towards full fat dairy products, which for my money tastes better anyway.
Right.
And the fat content increase is very minimal. There's been a lot of push because I think a lot of people think like dairy allergies have become a very popular thing.
Yeah.
But not very many people have them. And people always also mistake dairy allergies for like a lactose intolerance. Lactose is the sugar in milk. So maybe your body has trouble digesting that sugar. And so they would say, dairy doesn't agree with me. I have an allergy to milk. But you only have allergies to proteins, not sugars, which like lactose. You know, Arnold Schwarzenegger in his famous movie Pumping Iron said that milk was for babies and real men drink beer. And that impacted generations of weightlifters to stop drinking milk.
Wow.
God. So, you know, milk gets a bad rap from a lot of people. I think it's because it's always, in nutrition, there's a big counterculture movement. Milk has always been pushed as a key nutritional staple because it has something like 18 essential nutrients. And so it's really good for you. And if you look at bang for your buck nutritionally, milk and dairy is really good. So I think the counterculture push has been, oh, you know, it's bad. It's got lactose, which you can't digest, and you shouldn't be doing it because, you know, we're the only people who drink milk from another animal.
Right.
I mean, we're the only organisms that drive cars, too, but that doesn't stop people from driving, you know?
Yeah.
There's not a lot of good reason to
wait
not
a minute.
Drink
my
milk.
Dog drives. Doesn't yours?
Yeah, no. My pug, his legs are too short.
244-17. Is lactose a different kind of sugar than the other kinds of sugar we're talking about here?
So there are only a handful of basic kinds of sugar, and lactose is basically, you know, two sugars that have been put together, and some people have trouble breaking that bond, like digesting that sugar. So you can either choose something like lactaid, which is like a milk product where the lactose has already been digested, or you just eat low lactose things like cheese, like cheddar cheese is very low, has no lactose, or one of my favorite things is kefir. It's a fermented yogurt. And it has probiotics, has beneficial bacteria in it that actually pre-digest that lactose.
Huh. I like 24, too. Let's go to Plainfield. Bob, good morning.
Gents, real quick question.
Mm-hmm.
Grass-fed beef versus grain-fed beef. Any difference? And which one's better? And I'll listen off air. Thanks.
All right.
So there's very minimal nutritional difference. And if you look at what is grass-fed and what is not, there's a big misconception about that because not a lot of cows are fed grass. People think it's they've been fed grass exclusively, but most beef that you would see is actually grass finished, which means the only last 3 months of their life when they would normally get corn, they get grass. And it changes the taste and it changes the nutritional profile very minimally. It's definitely not better for you. And I think you should just eat what you like. You know, I've had clients say, well, I've heard grass-fed beef is the only one that's good for you, but I can't afford it. I mean, it's grass-fed beef's a premium product.
Right.
And so I'm not going to eat beef. But beef is kind of like milk. It has a lot of nutrients that we need in our diet. And so if you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater and say, I can't afford grass-fed beef, so I'm not going to eat any beef. You know, all the research done, my PhD was actually looking at beef and cardiovascular disease. And all the clinical trials done with beef use conventional or regular beef and show really good changes in cardiovascular disease risk factors. So eat what you like.
Let's go to Barry. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good.
Good. It's a great show you're having. I was wondering if there's an email address that I could email Mark some questions on. Mike some questions on.
All right. You have an email, Mike?
Yeah, so you could actually, if you email, it's just Lisa, L-I-S-A, at MikeRussell.com.
Okay.
Lisa's somebody who helps me out, and she fields all the questions, and then we get back to you on it.
Spell your name for him.
It's RoussellL.com.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for your call. 244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. Okay, so beside eating more Greek yogurt, what's my ultimate takeaway here at 5 after 10?
Your ultimate takeaway is to eat protein at every meal, eat a fruit or a vegetable at every meal, and strive for moderation. So if you like, don't look at foods as good or bad. If you like something, you don't have to, and it's bad, quote unquote, bad for you, you don't have to swear it off forever, but just, you know, corral it and have it in smaller amounts, less often.
Mm-hmm.
And it's consistency over the long term. It's not about losing it's not about losing 20 pounds in 7 days. It's about losing 20 pounds and never gaining that weight back.
Mm-hmm. But always eat Greek yogurt at every meal, right? Is that pretty much what I'm learning here today?
Yeah. No, it's a portable, easy protein for people.
Okay.
But it's not superior to any other protein you'd find.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for coming in this morning. That was, I think, very helpful to a lot of people. And Say hi to your dad when you go and pick up your kid, if your kid hasn't already gotten into the family business.
I will. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for your time. Mike Roussel is a nutritionist. And again, tell me the name of the book. It's The Six Pillars of Nutrition. You can get it on Amazon. It's in Kindle form, and you're going to make it into a book when you get yourself down a jet service envelope, aren't you?
Yes, exactly.
We'll take a quick break here. Bob Nace coming up next from Talk Radio News Service. We'll be back right after this.
Hi, folks.